You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Atheistically Speaking. This is episode 122, and I'm your host, Thomas Smith. Okay, well, I had mentioned a week ago, 2 weeks ago, I don't know, that I was going to do a secular marriage-related episode. I was trying to assemble a panel, and I'll be honest, like, things are a little hectic with the wedding coming up, and I wanted to get this out at a certain time. There are lots of restrictions, and I got plenty of great volunteers. Thank you so much for volunteering, you guys. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry that I ended up kind of changing my mind just because scheduling was weird and I couldn't decide on the format I wanted. I changed my mind a couple times because I was trying to do different things. So in the end, I ended up going a different direction and ended up speaking to two people who one person who has experience in secular weddings, and then Jake Farwarden, who I just love having on the show. Anyway, no, he's actually planning to officiate his brother's wedding, I believe it was. So that's the direction I ended up going. And then in addition to that, next week, I've got some exciting episodes for next week. Mondays, I'm not going to talk about yet, because we're timing when stuff comes out, when releases come out about Monday's episode. But it should be pretty exciting. I'm excited about it. But I don't want to step on how we're planning to release that information. So Monday, zip about Monday. But then Thursday, I'm planning on having Lydia on, who is the target of my marriage, of my attempt to be married. And we're going to talk about it's going to be fun. We're going to talk about having to write a ceremony and that sort of thing. And we're going to look at some, alternatives, some religious alternatives, or rather, I guess they aren't alternatives. They're kind of the standard. We're going to look at the religious standard for weddings, and it'll be fun. So that'll be kind of the end, at least in the immediate future, of the secular wedding topic. But thank you again for volunteering, and I won't do that again. Next panel I ask for is real. I totally just kind of changed my mind. I apologize for that. And I also emailed everyone. I believe I emailed everyone and told them what was going on. So, but I just wanted to let the listeners know as well. So here's the interview where we talk about secular weddings. Now, stay tuned after the interview. I have yet another, what I think is a pretty exciting announcement. So make sure to listen after the interview, and I will see you then. Joining me today is someone you know and someone you may or may not know. Jake Farwarden, been on the show, on the bonus content. How are you doing?
Yo, I'm good. I'm great. I'm really well, actually. It's Saturday morning. I'm looking out of a window. There's lots of greenery. There's lots of grayery as well. It looks like there'll be a storm soon, but I'm well. I'm happy. How are you?
You mentioned it was hot. How hot are we talking there?
How hot is it? It's hot. In Australian terms, it's hot.
Okay. That's scientific.
You know,
okay.
Hot is Australian for hot. It's hot. It's humid, and it's about 32 degrees and it's 7 a.m. So I think we're in for a steamer today.
Yeah, I realized as I asked that, it's going to be in Celsius, and I'll have no idea what you're talking about. So give me that in pounds. How hot is it in pounds?
I think that's 175 pounds.
Okay.
So it's a good-looking guy. I don't know. I don't know in Fahrenheit.
Our very special guest this week is Merrily. How are you doing, Merrily?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very glad to have you. Now, our topic for today is secular weddings. And I'm told you have some experience in this. You've been married 70 times. No, I'm just kidding. I want to find someone who had a string of marriages. No, this is something you do. This is something you've done for a while. Is that right?
That's correct. I officiate weddings and have done quite a number of them.
Awesome. Can you tell us a bit about how you got into that and how long you've been doing it and that sort of thing?
Sure. I've been doing it a few years, and I got into it, as you say, through the Humanist Society, which is affiliated with the American Humanist Association. So I'm a certified humanist celebrant, and I got started basically to provide services for the non-theistic community. It was after a number of disasters happened, like hurricanes and shootings and things like that, that kind of highlighted the need for our non-theistic community to have services for those of us who are not religious. So I decided.
When you said disasters, I thought you were talking about multiple divorces or something.
No, I'm talking about situations that sometimes they look to religious leaders to respond to.
Right.
And it started a conversation in the non-theistic community here in the U.S., at least, about how we could step up and build some infrastructure and provide services for our community as well. So I decided that that was something I could definitely do and became a celebrant then.
And it must be somewhat enjoyable to be able to bring that service to people and be present at those occasions and provide that non-religious alternative, right?
Absolutely. I live in New Mexico, and it just so happened that less than a week after I officiated my first wedding, which was for a couple of friends of mine, Santa Fe started issuing licenses for same-sex couples. Oh. And so I went down and offered my services. And within 2 weeks, I had officiated 100 weddings.
Oh, wow.
So that was
Did you contact Guinness Book about that? That might be, that'd be some sort of record.
No, but it was so joyful. It was just a wonderful time. And I've continued to do that since then.
Can I ask, what tends to be your source material for ceremonies? And if you, I mean, every wedding is different, of course, but I mean, when it's religious, it's kind of easy. There's a lot of things you can say. There's depending on the religion, there might be things you have to say, that sort of thing. How does it go in a secular wedding? Give us some examples or something of what tends to be said.
Well, a secular wedding is focused on the couple and what the couple wants. And so there's actually quite a bit of variety. If a couple wants a rather traditional ceremony, of course, you can include most of the same elements that a religious wedding would include, like the processional, some words of welcome, a declaration of their intent to be married. There can be aspects of the wedding where the parents are honored or included. Sometimes if the couple has children that they want to include in the ceremony, we could have a ritual for that. Sometimes they give tribute to family members who are no longer with us, and so they want to remember them. There are reflections and readings and, of course, the exchange of vows, sometimes the exchange of rings, and then other rituals can be included. And there's a wide variety of those, like wine sharing or planting a tree or, you know, just all kinds of reflections like that. And then there is the pronouncement of marriage, and then usually a kiss and the introduction of the couple. So that's along, you know, more traditional lines, but couples can also design their ceremony to be a reflection of them. So I work with the couple to talk with them about the tone of the wedding. Do they want it to be joyful and playful, or more traditional, solemn? You know, what do they want the takeaway tone to be? Warm and celebratory, or it just is fashioned around what the couple wants. Mm,
yeah. Yeah, as opposed to something like a Catholic wedding, I think it's pretty rigid.
I think the beauty of a humanist ceremony is that it really does focus on the couple themselves, because we're paying attention to what we're actually doing, which is honoring the relationship of these two people.
Now, how many comic book themed weddings did you perform? Batman married.
Yeah. I know of some which have been done, but right, I haven't had the pleasure of doing that.
And I would guess, this is just a guess, but I would guess there's not a lot of sermon about the role of the woman in the household and that sort of thing that I've witnessed a couple weddings very awkwardly, just like, what is happening right now?
No, no, actually not.
So it was a good guess.
In fact, my tagline is joyful sermonless ceremonies.
There you go. Not a lot of preaching going on.
No.
Yeah, it's kind of sucky, honestly. Some of the some of the more religious weddings where the priest doesn't really know the couple, and they start getting off on their own tangent of sermon. It's just like, it doesn't feel too personal. Whereas the secular approach, the humanist approach, feels nice and personal. And like you said, I imagine it varies greatly. I'm sure there's a big difference between one wedding and another.
Uh-huh. You know, though, with the religious one, I was married in a church with a priest while I was religious, and I can certainly say, you know, the way that it's supposed to be is that you are supposed to get to know the priest.
Oh, sure, sure.
You know, yeah. you are supposed to invariably get married in one of the person's childhood churches. You're supposed to sit down and do counseling with the priest. You know, you go through the if your child was, or if a child that you bore had a particular deformity, would you consider X or Y? You know, those awful scenarios that couples should certainly discuss prior to getting married, a thrust upon you. And certainly you are supposed to, from the religious perspective, you are certainly supposed to know the priest. And
of course, and by no means did I mean every religious, wedding was bad or anything. I just have witnessed an example or two, and it can be a little weird. But course, I'm sure there are many a fine religious wedding. Didn't mean to say they were all bad, but I do like how it is more about the couple. I think that's one thing I do like in general about the different things. But, and I also will say, to add to your point, Jake, one of the challenges that I've come across, and again, getting married in about a month, is at least with religion, they have had all this time and they've had all this, the opportunity to be sort of in charge, like Marilee said, of these certain occasions, occasions, disasters, whether it be disaster, whether it be a wedding or funeral or whatever it is. They've had a lot of time and practice at doing these rituals, and there are certain things that they're very good at, and it feels kind of official. You know, it feels like, oh, this is what we need to be doing. This is what we value as a society. And when we sat down to try to figure out what our wedding was going to be, it is a little like, what do we do? You know, we have too much choice, you know? Mm-hmm. I didn't know if you, if that didn't spark any thoughts, that's okay. But it is interesting, you know, having too many choices in terms of that could be one potential, maybe not downside, but just challenge of a secular wedding.
I mean, I can certainly speak for the religious wedding side in that, certainly there were very few choices. We had a choice of a female celebrant or a male priest. At that time, I was, you know, very religious, and we took the male priest. But the rest of it was pretty well, you know, just how many people do you want in your bridal party? How many people? How many groomsmen do you want? And how many guests can the church accommodate? And then, you know, the afterwards, it's I always found, you know, from my limited experience of one wedding, I always found that the
there's still time,
the reception. Yeah, that's true. That's true. We live in hope. We live in hope. The reception was the difficult, many multiple choices part. But I imagine that Merrily has a cacophony of choices that the couple would have to decide upon for the actual wedding itself.
Well, I work with them. And initially, I kind of try to get an overview of what they want from their wedding. You know, again, the takeaway tone, who's going to be in attendance, those kinds of things. So I do ask a lot of specific questions about what the couple has planned. But in addition to that, I work with them to try and craft, custom craft a ceremony that includes what's important to them. So their vows, for instance, I like it when they write their own, but I give couples a few options just to start with, and they can use those options if they like, or else they can just use them for inspiration to write their own. Mm-hmm. And so I have a collection of readings and, you know, and other aspects of the weddings, different wording for different ceremonies and rituals and that kind of thing. So the Humanist Society provides, you know, a lot of these things to celebrants to get them started. So if you're looking for a humanist celebrant, you can simply go to the website humanist-society.org, and you can click on Find a Celebrant, and it has them by state, and you can see if there's a celebrant near you to officiate your wedding.
Let me ask hopefully not a boring technical question, but I was wondering if you could go into what's required of you as a celebrant. What's legally, what are the things you have to do in this country? And then I think it's going to be interesting maybe to compare it, because Jake is probably in a different situation over in Australia.
Right. Well, that actually varies by state.
Oh, sure. Okay. Feel free to use whatever, you know, your current state or wherever you, you know, practice right. Most.
Well, let me start at the beginning. To become a humanist celebrant, you go to this website I mentioned, humanist-society.org, and you can click on Become a Celebrant, and the qualifications and the application is there online for you. So that's a good place to start if a person wants to be a celebrant. Then if you're certified through the society as a celebrant, as a humanist celebrant, then you're qualified to officiate. It's kind of like the equivalent of clergy, so you can officiate ceremonies. Now, that said, you would need to check, once you are certified as a celebrant, you would need to check with the county clerk or whoever was issuing marriage licenses. And that varies, you know, that varies by state as to what's required. Some require registration, et cetera. New Mexico does not. And so I talked with the county clerk's office and, you know, just checked out what I would need to do and got familiar with the forms and those kinds of things. So then I was qualified to officiate. Hmm. Within the state, and then they need to obtain a marriage license. The couple does that. They obtain their marriage license. And then after officiating the ceremony, we sign it with witnesses. and either the couple or I turn it back in to the same clerk's office where they obtained it.
Okay. So in terms of requirements of the ceremony, not too much except sounds like witnesses, some paperwork. There's nothing else that has to be said or done a certain way in order to, for the legal part?
Not here in New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just officiate the ceremony and then complete the form that the county clerk's office has given to them. And then it needs to be filed, of course, so that it's on record.
Okay. Yeah, I think in my state, actually, I'm getting married in Oregon. I think there might be some different requirements.
That's possible.
Right. Yeah. I think that you have to say certain phrases, but it's not too big of a deal. Now, Jake, let's go over to you. You already talked a little briefly about it, but so tell me about your decision to want to become a celebrant, and is it the same terminology in Australia?
Yeah,
or is
pretty
there a
much
different word for it. Okay,
no, pretty much. So my little brother was getting married, and in their haste, in my little brother and his partner's haste to hand out positions to my very large family, I said, instead of making me groomsman or whatever, I would be so delighted if you allowed me to be the celebrant. The conversation was around, well, you're not a celebrant now, how are you going to do that? So I agreed that I would go and get my celebrancy license and become one, and specifically for their wedding. So their wedding is next year, and I have plenty of time to do that. But I have started now in Australia. In order to become a celebrant, you need to hold a minimum qualification of a certificate 4 in celebrancy. Now, luckily enough, because all academic institutions in Australia are governed in roughly the same way, I can claim recognition for prior learning because I have a couple of degrees and I'm still studying at the moment as well. So I'm able to pretty quickly finish that. That qualification.
Oh, there's an education hopefully. Requirement for that?
Yeah. Oh, well, wow. and that's kind of a good idea. I mean, the actual celebrancy website, one of the first things that it says on there is, do not become a celebrant if you are thinking of, you know, undertaking this as a career or as your main source of income, because there's very little opportunity to make money in that area. And of course, as I mentioned, that's not, you know, my primary reason for doing that. But it's one of those ridiculous things that you do for whatever reason, despite the fact that you can't make a career out of it. You do need to have an education. I don't particularly understand that, but it does kind of make sense to a certain extent that you would treat weddings with a certain level of reverence and decorum, I suppose, that kind of does make sense there. But so once you finish your Certificate 4, you need to apply to the Attorney General's office, the Federal Attorney General's office, and they can grant or say no, I suppose. They have that power to say no. And then once you have that, you pay your yearly subscription of, I think, a couple of $1,000, wow. And then you're ready to go.
I hope there's an exchange rate that makes that a little cheaper. A couple thousand dollars.
No, actually, it makes it vastly more expensive.
Really?
Lisa.
Oh, yeah, my gosh. That's a lot. Yeah. So, yeah, you can't make a career out of it, but the state can, I guess.
Look, maybe you can. Maybe you can as a – and I think this –
to break even, you're going to have to start pumping out marriages, Jake. You got to get on this.
Well, this is the cool thing, you know. Since I announced, I announced it on the show some time ago on my show that I was going to become a celebrant, and you know, my idea was to be able to provide a secular humanist style wedding service, and so many people have asked.
Ooh,
so I'm now
charging. Come up with a rate.
well, in fact, no, I don't think that I would. I mean, perhaps it's completely naive, but as Merrily was sort of suggesting, it is kind of really special, I think, to be involved with your friends in such a way, you know, that they would invite you to to officiate their wedding.
All right, as long as they get you drunk afterward, that's fine.
Of course.
Yeah, no, that is really neat. That's cool that a lot of people have come forward. I wonder if after you're done, I mean, hopefully they're all scheduled for after you're done with your program, your master's and such.
Oh, yeah. Well, I won't be able to finish the certificate for qualification until most likely late May.
Okay, but that would be really cool if afterward you're traveling, you know, going.
Oh, yeah.
Got a wedding every other weekend.
I have a really good friend who's a wedding photographer, and he visits weddings around Australia and takes just the most amazing photos. And yeah, people from all around Australia, they're all friends, basically. They fly him to the place and he pays nothing. And yeah, I would absolutely do that.
Yeah, that sounds
good. You just
really
fly
neat.
Me there and I'll do it.
Yeah, I'd be in. So but you mentioned over the email.
Yes.
This part I'm very interested in. There are certain requirements in Australia for what you have to say during the marriage for it to be official. What are some of those?
Well, there's really only one. I mean, you still have to do the do you, and they both must agree. But the wording around that can be, it's mostly something that you can sort of change around depending on what the individuals, the couple want to use. But there is one sentence or paragraph rather that you must include, and I'll paraphrase. And this is because I think from memory it was about 2003, 2004, the then Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, decided that he would enshrine his bigotry in the Marriage Act of Australia. And basically he enforced that every service, be it civil or religious, that takes place must include a terminology around the fact that marriage is an institution for a man and a woman, one man and one woman, under the premise of creating children as the bedrock of society. So that's a loose taking of a loose approximation of the wording that's required, but every single service must include that wording.
This was quite shocking. I didn't know about this. And I think it's the reason that I think we need, as a community, I'm going to encourage my listeners, we need to make fun of Australia more and,
I totally
and really
agree.
Just give it some shit, because I can't believe that how, you know, imposing and how backwards and how, you know, it's not, it is so wrong on so many levels. It's really astounding. And so that's in effect all over Australia, every single wedding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
Unreal.
So, and it's not something that is currently up for discussion. It's not something that is currently being brought to Parliament to overturn. No, unfortunately it must occur in all weddings. Yeah.
Wow. So you guys really are a ways back on gay marriage, I guess.
We are able to officiate same-sex weddings in some areas, and they're partnerships rather, or
right, they're not actually
ceremonies, yeah. Civil ceremonies rather. So they're not, you can't have a complete wedding, but you can certainly have a civil ceremony. It is really unfortunate, but that's only in some states, and the state that I reside in is not one of those states, unfortunately.
Hmm. Yeah, well, okay. So one day, hopefully, that'll be gone. But really unbelievable. I can't believe that not only it's bad enough to just say, sorry, you can't get married, gay people, but to put a sentence in every single, even straight, you know, weddings saying, oh, and just in case anyone was wondering, any gay people in attendance to this wedding, you also can't get married. Just a reminder as you're here at this wedding. Unbelievable. So
you know,
I found that pretty shocking.
I have every intention of whenever I need to say, you know, let's take the example of my little brother's wedding. My little brother's wedding will be attended by my auntie, who is gay, and her long-term partner. And I, you know, so it's kind of shocking that I would have to say such a thing in front of my friends and family who all know that I'm not a horrible bigot. So, you know, I have every intention of, you know, taking a little bit of the punch out of those, out of that paragraph by, you know, prefacing it with something like, you know, as a consequence of our formerly bigoted Prime Minister, John Howard, I am required by law to say the following sentence or something to that order, you know, just to really take the punch out of the requirement.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. I hope everybody does that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now I wanted to ask you, Marilee, I wanted to put you on a spot a tiny bit, and it's okay. Feel 100% free if you don't have any answers, but I wanted to get some of your experience, which sounds very interesting, and especially the 100 weddings in 2 weeks or whatever. Was it a week or 2 weeks?
It was two weeks, 100 weddings. Yes.
Wow. Uh-huh. What would you, do you have any, okay, so I'm getting married. I'm going for, if we're pretending that you are going to be my officiant, celebrant, okay. I guess is the best. I'm going for a joyful tone, uh-huh. I'd say that, you know, when, what are the, some of the different tones you described? And I'd say not a somber or serious kind of thing.
Right.
More of a joyful one, but not like too ridiculous or anything. Just kind of pleasant, nice, that sort of thing. It's a morning wedding.
Warm and heartfelt.
Sure,
and,
sure. But I mean, at the same time, I've got, you know, I have, for better or worse, have a sense of humor and have a hard time, you know, family that doesn't take stuff seriously. So not too serious. Got to be
lighthearted then.
Right. Do you have any basic high level recommendations? Anything you could say in terms of language or things we ought to do, or just wondering. It's okay if I put you on the spot too much.
Oh, gracious me. Well,
because I haven't been married before. I don't have the experience.
Right. You see, this is something that I usually work out over a period of time with the couple. Some of that would be determined just by my tone of voice, my engagement with the couple, allowing laughter in the course of the ceremony.
That's already a good one. So be ready and allow for laughter in a ceremony, and don't take a tone as though it's a script you need to march through or something.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
So, I have.
And you got to start it with the Jerry Seinfeld set about weddings.
I've already
What's
made
the
this
deal with weddings. That's,
Jake, this is so funny. I've made this very joke between Lydia and I. I said, like, so can we get the brick wall and the like, and then start out the ceremony? Yeah. So it sounds like a yes. Then I should do that. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Jake?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And let's see. Is there anything that you've observed that maybe in the weddings you've performed, any bit of language or anything, Marilee, where you thought, oh, that worked really well, that sort of thing? Anything memorable that sticks to you from your experience?
Well, I generally make note of the fact at some point in the ceremony that this is about the couple
and, yeah, yeah.
And that this is their moment and that we're all just privileged to share in it with them. And I do try to include the guests when possible, you know, with reference to those who are supportive, and I make a lot of eye contact and smile a lot. I can't tell you. I've been to some weddings where the officiant is just so somber.
Yeah.
I just want to say, hey, you know, this is a happy occasion. Would you please smile?
Yeah, that's good advice there.
Maybe they mixed up officiant with efficient and they were just trying to get through and be as efficient as possible.
Yeah. You know, and I think that kind of approach on the part of the officiant also kind of increases the stress and the sense that, you know, I've been to some weddings where it seems like people are afraid to do something wrong or they're worried that, you know, that it won't go just exactly the way they planned. And And so I try to set a tone of this being a joyous, happy occasion that we're all there to celebrate this union. And so I think
kind of take the pressure off a bit.
Yeah. The focus on the couple and just being joyful myself, I think helps set the tone.
Yeah, interesting. Good. I like that. Let's see, Jake, anything you'd add to any of that? I mean, you don't have the experience, but
not yet. No. But yeah, I mean, I think about this a little bit because I do. You know, I want to make it, as I said, you know, my first one will be, well, certainly the reason why I'm becoming a celebrant is because of my little brother and his partner. And, you know, I had the idea of, you know, standing up at the beginning and saying, look, this wedding is not about the couple, okay? If it was about the couple would have just gone to, you know, the courthouse and had their, you know, their marriage organized there. But this is about you. It's about all of their friends, all of their family. And I hope you recognize that and, you know, have gotten them good presents and you've gotten them money. Yeah. And
open your checkbooks.
Exactly. This is not about them. This is about you and how much you love them and how much they love you. Otherwise, they wouldn't have invited you. So make sure you make it known.
Check that registry. Make sure there's no blanks in there. No, nothing left out.
No, sorry, go on.
If I could add to that, including those in attendance, one ritual that I really enjoyed was that a couple tied their rings together and passed them forward during the ceremony. The ushers passed them forward and everyone had a chance to warm the rings with their love and good intentions. And that was really, really sweet. And then the rings were up at the front in time for the ring exchange. So that was a way for everyone to demonstrate, their inclusion in the ceremony.
Yeah. And who wants a cold ring? Nice, nice and warm. We need to do this with medical instruments too.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a good idea if the rings were copper, maybe they'd kill off the bacteria. But wow. I'm not sure. I mean, as somebody who works in a hospital, I really appreciate the symbolism. Don't get me wrong. I really appreciate the symbolism.
Well, she didn't mention they handed out, you know, gloves to everyone ahead of time.
Purell.
No, I like that. That's a good.
It can be on a pillow or something like that. Yeah. Handle the rings.
Well, I really like the symbolism, though, Merrily, that you bring. Are there any other types of ways that you would show that type of symbolism? You know, everybody touches the ring to show their love, you know, handing that up to the couple and their support, handing that up to the couple. Are there any other ways that you would pass through that type of, you know, love and community spirit with symbolism?
There are different ways to engage those in attendance. There are actual, not vows, but statements of intention that you can say, and then it can be kind of a responsive reading where you ask those in attendance if they are willing to support and encourage this couple, and they can say "we will" and that kind of thing, so that it's more of a participatory thing. Also, some couples want to include certain specific people in their ceremony, so they might have them. They might select some readings and then ask certain people to read those throughout the ceremony. So that's another way to include people.
Do you recommend them doing readings, or are they? I mean, the only reason I ask is, I think of readings and I think of things that are said too often and have become a little bit cliche. Like, are there readings that you would sort of recommend against, or readings that you would recommend, or do you maybe even recommend that the people, you know, giving readings or giving speeches, that they sort of write one themselves?
I talk with a couple about what they want in that regard. Yeah. I have a collection of them that they can look through if they want to select one of those. Often the couple will have a poem or something like that that is meaningful for them, that has, you know, that they've sent one another at some point in their relationship or shared with one another. And sometimes the couple will talk with a friend and simply ask them to, you know, to make some remarks. So it really varies, and I don't tell the couple what they should do, but give them options that they can select from and allow them to have input on what they would like.
Right. Yeah, it definitely sounds like more of a counseling type thing rather than a recommending or a dictating kind of.
It's a real collaborative effort.
Sure.
It's a collaboration. And then we come up with a ceremony that works for them.
All right. Well, in wrapping up, is there anything else, Marilee, from your 100 plus, oh, who knows how many by now, wedding experience that you'd like to share? Over 200?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Over 200. Well, there you go. There must have been some very interesting experiences. Is there anything else you want to share from your experience?
Well, if anyone wants to come to Santa Fe, New Mexico, I would be happy to marry them here. It's a beautiful destination. So you can check out my website at celebrantmarilee.com. That's CelebrantMarilee.com. And,
I will put that link in the episode. Absolutely.
Excellent.
All right. And how about you, Jake? Anything you'd like to close with?
Yeah, sure. I suppose I'm not a celebrant yet, but perhaps you can visit my website in the distant future, imaginaryfriendshow.com. Why not? Down the track, I'll add a celebrancy tab so you can contact me and fly me somewhere around Australia and I'll come and officiate your wedding.
That is pretty cool. I think that would be a really neat setup. I would do that. Yeah. I mean, no, I don't think anyone would be interested in me, but if I were you, I would say, yeah, if you handle the travel, I'm there free of charge. That would be
neat. Too.
Absolutely.
I actually say that on my website. Hey, if you want to fly me to a cool destination,
there you go. Everyone go to Marilee's website, and then we'll give you about a year, and then go to Jake's website. In fairness,
that's awesome.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining me. I appreciate the discussion, and I look forward to speaking with you again sometime soon.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I mentioned an exciting announcement. And first, I'm going to thank my new patrons. That's part of the announcement. See, I've had actually quite an influx of new patrons. I'm really happy. Partially I'm getting more listeners. The show's building. That's good. I really like that. And also maybe people are liking the consistent bonus content with Jake Farwarden, of which there's another one. There's going to be one every week. And it's really fun. It's its own podcast and all that. So maybe that's why they're coming in. Maybe it has nothing to do with either of those things. Who knows? But I'd like to thank Katie Cannell, I think it's pronounced, but I'm going to say Katie Quiznos, for coming back on board. I always like that. Sometimes people have to drop off for a little bit and then come back, and I can always appreciate that. Katie, of course, big supporter of T and the B as well. So thank you, Katie. Your support is awesome. Skeptic Sarah, newly signed on. Zimu Zinu. Interesting name. Thank you so much. Zimu signed on as a $10 patron, so you're going to get another thanks very quickly. TJ, thank you very much for signing on. Pete, thank you as well. Steve, we've got a few Steves, so unfortunately there's no last name, so I can only thank Steve. Sorry. Tor Melkovic, Thank you very much. It's like that great movie, Being Tor Malkovich. Bryce, and that does it. I think that's all my new patrons as of right now. Thank you guys so much for signing on. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope that I can give you the bang for your buck. I don't know a lot of podcasts who do an additional bonus content. Well, one comes to mind, Imaginary Friends Show. That's another podcast that does a whole additional bonus episodes. Now, here's my announcement. I've had a goal on the Patreon to do $250. I was going to do a separate feed. I already have a separate feed, but I only post the bonus content and early episodes on it. But I was thinking, despite the fact that it'll be a lot of work, I had set the goal to really reward the patrons, that if I get to this goal, I'm going to edit episodes differently and have the bonus content feed be all patrons need. So patrons could just delete the other feed, and then I would put every episode on the bonus feed. And not only that, those episodes would be completely free of any promotional anything, any patron, you know, like this right now, any page, any me asking for patron, all that, I would edit that out and do completely separate files so that the patrons would have a nice clean feed that's all their own. Now, again, I mean, that's going to take work, but it was something I set as a goal. I kind of picked an amount. It was a while ago, so I just picked an amount of $250 and said, if I get to that goal, you know, it'll be worth doing this extra amount of work. Well, you guys have gotten me excited because I've got some new patrons, so I thought maybe I would do something fun and see if by the time I got a good arbitrary date. By the time I get married, so that's Sunday, April 19th. I'm going to set that as a deadline. If we get to, let's say, another arbitrary number, let's reduce. So it was 250. Let's go 215. If we can get the patron to 215 by the time I get married, I will reduce that goal. It's almost like a matching donation. You know, I'll match it with my own reduction of the goal. So just a little incentive. Maybe this won't spark any interest. Maybe it will. You know, current patrons, if that's something you'd be interested in, a very convenient separate feed with no ads, no Patreon plugs, nothing of any kind. Maybe you're a $1 patron. Try becoming a $2 patron. We wouldn't need too many people to do that. I'm going to ask you, this is very important. Please kindly don't set a goal that limits your donation to being below what it would be. I mean, it's okay if people use goals, but don't like arbitrarily, you know, don't bid $10 and then set a monthly goal of $2, because that's kind of gaming the system. And I can see if people do that. So I'm just asking you kindly to please not do that so we can reach this goal kind of properly. But I just wanted to say 215, that's the number I'll put up. If we reach, we got about a month. If we reach 215, by the time I get married, I will start doing that separate feed, and that'll be my little present. So I'll count down to it. You got a little while, but you know, if you're, and in the meantime, anyone who isn't a patron yet, there's plenty of good reasons already to become a patron. You got that extra feed, you got the early episodes, and then now if we get to 215, then you'll also have the completely ad-free, Patreon plug-free feed, and you won't have to hear any of this. You won't have to hear any of it. You get just the show and the bonus show. So if you want to get in on that, make sure to go to patreon.com/atheist and pledge today. Thank you so much. All right. Well, thank you for staying tuned. Next week is going to be a very exciting week. And that does it for this week. I will see you guys later. Thank you so much for listening.